Welcome to this week's edition of Flashback Friday, your opportunity to get some good review by listening to episodes from the past that Jason has handpicked to help you today in the present and propel you into the future. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn how to finance your next big real estate deal, there's a show for that. If you want to learn more about food storage and the best way to keep those onions from smelling up everything else, there's a show for that. If you honestly want to know more about business ethics, there's a show for that. And if you just want to get away from it all and need to know something about world travel, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Lee Heeb to the show. She is Iowa's Libertarian candidate for governor, and she is a practicing orthopedic surgeon. She has become kind of the go-to person on the subject of Ebola. We've got to think, is this hype or is it a real threat that we all need to be very concerned about? Lee, welcome. How are you?
Well, very good. Thank you for having me.
Good, good. It's good to have you. And we tried our interview before on Skype, and the connection just wasn't working so well. So we are on a cell phone, and we'll do the best we can with sound quality here. Ebola, real threat or a lot of hype?
Well, it is a real threat. I mean, right now, I think we're all holding our collective breath to see how many people pop up with this. It's a bad disease for which we have no vaccination and no treatment except supportive care. So we can take care of the onesies, twosies, you know, the Eric Duncan. But the problem is if it starts spreading like wildfire, we've got problems. And, you know, we have a lot of really smart people in the CDC. They really do know how to take care of this. The problem is the people that are in charge of the CDC and many government agencies are political, and they're choosing to be politically correct and not really choosing the right medical answer. You know, I just tweeted out the link on my tweet feed about the CDC's article on quarantine. You know, the problem is when you have no treatment for a disease, the only way you can get it under control, something this bad, is to stop the transmission. And that means stop the movement of people. It's just got to be done. You know, it's absurd to say that you're in self-isolation, like this doctor in New York, and that self-isolation consists of going in a subway and then going bowling. I mean, you have to ask yourself, what's not self-isolation? Vomiting in Macy's? I mean, it's just absurd. So we really have to. And, you know, it's not – I'm a libertarian. I believe strongly in libertarian principles in the Constitution. But you don't have the right to threaten somebody with a baseball bat, even if you don't hit them with it. You can't just keep swinging at them. And essentially, that's what you, when you've been exposed to something like Ebola, and let me tell you, the bioterrorist threat that is the most fearsome is smallpox. So if we can't handle this, this should be a knock on the door. We have to have a system in place for dealing with these things because they're out there and they're bad guys that want to get a hold of them. And in this case, they can get a hold of the agent. Now, for most Americans, let me just tell you, I'll tell you what I've told my boys about smallpox, and for some, to a lesser degree, it's true about this. If this really starts cropping up in multiple cities, personally, I would stop flying for a while. And the way you protect yourself is simply not going to the area of outbreak and not being in transit with people with the outbreak, with exposure. This isn't something you need to duct tape your windows.
Flying is the same as cruise ships. I mean, a cruise ship would be dangerous as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, if there's really an outbreak that's not under control, I purposely wouldn't go on mass transit. That's exactly right. That's the first thing I would cut down. And, you know, the solution in Liberia, this is the sad part, this could be solved in Liberia. What they need to do is they need to shut their borders, not to people coming in and giving them help from the outside, but to them flying out. That's just common sense. And then the second thing is they need to stop transportation between cities and towns. And then in those towns where the Ebola, that are considered hot zones, where the Ebola is raging, you stop transportation between households. And the role of the international community, really, in my opinion, this is just my plan, but this is the tried and true plan we've used over centuries, is then we bring medical care and food to your house. You don't move. So people that, you know, that we could supply food and hazmat suits, as could the rest of the international community, and let people be taken care of in their homes, but don't have people running out foraging for food. That is what's going to cause this thing to continue. This would burn out in 2 months if we just, that's how it used to be when it was just in the jungle. It would just burn out in a couple months or less.
And it would burn out because the people who have it, would they die?
They would die. And you know, yeah. The sad truth is we can't make Liberia a first world medical facility in the time it would take to solve this problem. So what we have to understand is, and to some extent, we can't even save our own people. You know, look at, we've had, I think we're up to 24 Doctors Without Borders, and I think 16 are dead. So, you know, the problem is those who are going to die are going to die. Those that are going to live are going to live, but then it's going to be done. It's not kinder to fail to quarantine people and let this kill thousands.
Couldn't agree more, of course.
Stop it now.
Let's talk about the treatment side of it. There is no treatment and no cure, but we've had a couple of recoveries, haven't we?
Well, you know, your ability to recover, I mean, they had done one, I shouldn't say there's no treatment. They have done one treatment now that seems to be helpful, and that's they've taken blood transfusions from people who have survived Ebola and presumably have antibodies to it. That makes a lot of sense. You know, how much of that blood's available is the question. That helps them, again, when you have one or two victims, not if you have thousands. You know, I suspect that our survival in America is going to be much better than in Liberia based on sanitation and health, general nutrition. So our immune function is better. You know, it's just like, you know, George Washington survived smallpox because he was just a tough dude and he had a great immune system. And people in the old days, I mean, the healthier you are, the better chance you have of surviving it. And people have certain quirks in their immune system that may make them more susceptible or less susceptible. But it's right now, it looks like this particular outbreak's about 50 to 55% fatal.
What can one do to strengthen their immune system?
Well, actually, you know, I don't know if you do this, but I'm also fellowship trained in anti-aging medicine. And that's kind of my new career path and my big hobby and my semi-retirement. But basically, and I have a book coming out called Surviving the Medical Meltdown, which is, you know, getting what to do when you don't have a doctor available in the future, because I'm afraid that the medical system is about on the bridge of collapse. But the whole center of that book is exactly what you said, is how to be as healthy as you possibly can. And I'm going to tell you, if I had to pick one thing to tell people, the biggest, it seems to be one of the miracle hormones we have is vitamin D. It's not really a vitamin, it's really a hormone. And if you...
D, you said D, right?
D as in dog, yeah.
D3.
It turns out that almost everybody's D is low, unless you happen to be a native, you know, aboriginal that lives on the equator and wears a loincloth, your D levels are low.
In other words, because that person, that aboriginal, spends a lot of time in the sun, right?
The sun.
Yeah, but the problem is the sun has bad side effects too, like skin cancer. So getting the D from not just sun is a good idea, right?
Right. And honestly, we just don't live a lifestyle that would work for. It's not just about the hours in the sun. It's also that if you take baths, it takes the oils out of the skin, and there's lots of different things. A friend of mine who played 18 holes of golf 6 days a week in Arizona, where you are, I guess, he basically, his D was 20, which is really, really low. And, you know, and he wouldn't believe me until I kept telling him, you should take vitamin D. No, 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 I play golf. Well, it didn't work. So I take 10,000 units a day. It's been shown there's never been an overdose of 10,000 units a day of vitamin D3. And in the Japanese study they did about influenza, they showed that having vitamin D levels elevated was more protective than the influenza vaccine. Now, influenza is a virus also. And presumably, I mean, it just seems to be that people that their D levels are up have less diseases, including cancer. It turns out you get your vitamin D level over 55, and your risk of breast cancer goes down by 83%. You know, we never hear that from the government agencies, but the truth is there's a lot you can do to make yourself healthy. And that's probably, if I had to pick one thing, vitamin D3 actually heals the telomeres, the ends of your DNA, so you have less replicative mistakes. So I get all of my patients on that.
I have another show that I'm just launching called The Longevity Show. And I am actually, I had my telomeres tested because, I'm interested in doing research for my show. And fortunately, according to my telomeres, I'm a little younger than I really am, which is good news. But I started taking TA65, which is one of the other things they say you can do to lengthen the telomeres. I'm not exactly sure about that yet, but it's fascinating.
Oh, yeah. No, this is, well, yeah, no, that's very interesting. And I've thought about doing that, but I'm not convinced about the drug. You know, I mean, if I were convinced about the drug, I'd test my telomeres, but like, I'll wait and hear from you to see what you think.
But, yeah, I'm not convinced either, but the jury's out. I'll let you know in a year. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely take D3. And, you know, other things, obviously good nutrition. Now, I'm a real believer in eliminating gluten from the diet. I think when we look back in medicine in 30 years, you know, and I have a whole chapter about why your doctor's out of date in that book. And it has to do, again, with, you know, this is why I'm a libertarian, is because I've seen what government does to everything. And everything it touches, it poisons in some way. And we're practicing 30-year-old medicine. If you're doing a longevity show, you know this. But the standard medicine your doctor standardly gives you is out of date because of, and one of the main reasons is, The government says, the state medical boards, basically all states, say their standard of care is if you're not doing what 90% of your colleagues are doing, you're out of date. Or we consider you wrong. Well, but, you know, not in the old days, we'd consider the 10% leaders in their field, but now we thump them. And so people tend to go back and use these old methods just not to get trouble, but it's not ideal. So I think we're going to look back and say gluten was a bad actor. It turns out there's no question that gluten is the cause of autoimmune disease, like rheumatoid arthritis. There's a big Scientific American article on that a few years ago. There's books been written about that. But in my own experience, getting off gluten has changed lots of things in my health. And I you get a better, you can see it happening in people when you get off gluten. Lots of things get better. So it's a constant foreign protein that attacks your immune system. Now, it attacks people in different ways. But if you want to be as healthy as you possibly can so you don't die from these bad viruses that are going around, that's one of the things to do, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So D3, get off gluten, take D3, get off gluten. Anything else to become strong? Like you said, George Washington was just a tough dude.
Yeah.
I think everybody wants to be
right.
Be tough.
Yeah.
You know, when any sort of thing goes around, it's, you know, not just Ebola, of course.
Right. Well, like I say, I think gluten is a huge one. And in general, get off the low-carb diet. Get off the high-carb diet. I mean, we were meant to be meat and fat eater.
Paleo.
Really, I'm really the paleo diet person. You know, I think in general, you know, I think you need good sleep. And a lot of people, we extend, there's a great book by T.S. Wiley called Lights Out. And it's about the problems of us extending our daylight hours through electric lights. And we really screw up our hormone production and do a lot of bad things by trying to, instead of living by the sun cycle. Some of the healthiest people I know are the old farmer friends I have here in Iowa who live by the sun cycle. When it gets dark, they go to bed. When it gets light, they get up and go to work.
Being in harmony with nature is a great idea. And I try to do that myself. Still can't seem to sleep long enough, though. But, I do. I wake up a little bit before the sun usually and dim my lights in my home so that I naturally become tired in the evenings.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. No, that's the way to go. That's what Suzanne Summers is talking about, how she dims her lights and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, the pillars of anti-aging medicine are basically good nutrition is the basis, you know, good sleep, exercise. I think I love weightlifting. I think it's probably the most beneficial exercise you can do for yourself. We were meant to pick things up and put them down, heavy
mm-hmm.
things.
Right.
And then take the right supplements and buy, if you're like, I'm 62, so it's bioidentical hormone replacement I believe in. So I do all those things and I feel pretty good. So I'm doing what I can to, but the other thing is, like I say, if it gets to the point where this is really popping up all over the place, it's time to cancel that cruise, in my opinion.
What else should we know about Ebola? So be strong, have a strong immune system. More on the government's response and what the government is, you know, doing, not doing, any criticisms of government.
Well, I mean, it's just insane for them, for the president, for example, to say you can't get it on a bus and then turn around and say, but don't get on a bus because you might give it to somebody. I mean, you know, I think a 10-year-old can figure out the logical fallacy there. That's just, you know, we this is not truly airborne. It doesn't go through vents. You know, smallpox in the last known case in Europe went out the window of a German hospital into another wing and killed some student nurses. That's airborne. Okay, this doesn't do that. But what it does do is it really comes out apparently in all of your body fluids, including sweat. So Dr. Arno said the other night, I heard him, he's one of the smart guys from the CDC, and he said he knows two doctors that just touched a patient and got and was killed by the virus. So this is not just like, you know, when they first came out and said, oh, this is bloodborne, they were making it like HIV. You know, they were so worried about people being stigmatized. They just were so worried about the political correctness aspect here that they're not being scientifically correct. And it's not like HIV. Yes, it's in the serum, it's in the blood, but HIV doesn't come out in your sweat. It doesn't come out in your tears. Nobody gets it from, you know, that kind of casual contact. This you do. So that's the point. Now, the other thing we don't know about it is how long it lives on fomites, meaning the intermediaries, you know, inanimate objects. Like when Eric Duncan was in the emergency room checking in, did he chew on the tip of the pen? You know, he had his hands all over. He would vomit. He had his hands all over the desk. How long does the Ebola live on those surfaces? We don't know. There's one study I just read off the NIH, the National Institutes of Health website, that said it lasts up to 50 days. Well, that could be a real problem. So I don't think we're out of the woods yet here, but I think it's looking better that we're not having a mass outbreak so far. That's assuming our government is actually telling us about who is really coming down with this. I mean, I hate to be skeptical, but these guys have not been real forthcoming, and they've kind of dissembled rather than be straight up about this. So I have to say, I want to know what happens to his fiance, and I want a negative as well as a positive. You know, as a physician, when I wait to hear the news, that's the kind of thing I wait to hear from. Okay, he got home from touching Ebola patients, getting exposed to Ebola. He comes down with it. He has a fiance. Presumably, they at least kiss. What happened to her? I want to know. You know, when I hear that,
mm-hmm. How come we don't know that? I mean, that's amazing. How come we don't know?
You see, the silence is deafening, and that worries me a little bit because I think
the media is not a lapdog. Well, not completely, but you know, why wouldn't the media have figured that out by now?
You know,
ambitious reporter would be, you know, anxious to break that story, right?
Well, one would think. I tell you, I've had my own experiences with the media as a Libertarian candidate for governor in Iowa, and you say they're not the lapdogs, but they get paid. They make a lot of money from government, and they don't go against the government. So, you know, in our state, it almost feels like there was an edict that went out this cycle. Don't even mention that nasty little word libertarian, because they keep pesky. They keep popping up talking about the Constitution and things we don't want to talk about.
When I talked to Steve Forbes and one of his daughters, they just told me about the second time when he ran. It was a media blackout.
Yeah,
they just would not cover Steve Forbes.
Right.
You know,
it's
absurd.
They have the power to tell people not to say things.
Yeah.
So I have to say, we don't know if they. Now, the other side of it is, unfortunately, I, with some exceptions, and I don't mean to damn all science writers. There's some very good science writers out there. But most of the reporters that are covering this are just parroting what they're being told by somebody. And they don't really have the scientific background to think about that. I mean, maybe. To me, it's an obvious question. I mean, you know, we've heard a little bit about Duncan's family, but we haven't heard very much lately. I just want to know the negatives as well as the positives, so to know what to think. I know that the cost, I mean, if you look at what's happened at Bellevue Hospital, and this is what I've said, my governor in Iowa, who's been in power as long as Saddam, by the way, and is, you know, the guy's a Republican, comes out and says, we're not going to quarantine Ebola patients. And I said, you know, I know this is not the hugest issue for us in Iowa, but really, what does that say? It says that he's willing to say to you, okay, you just got back from Liberia, you were treating Ebola patients, and now you can go work in the daycare again. You can go teach fifth grade or drive the public bus or be a checkout clerk at the grocery store. I mean, really, is that what he's saying? Because that is the alternative. There's not much in between. And, you know, and so what I said to them, what I've said when people have asked me in Iowa about this, I said, look at what just the cost of this to New York City has been. Besides the subway cleansing and the bowling alley shutting down, look at what Bellevue Hospital is about twice as big as the University of Iowa. I mean, it's huge. It's a huge hospital. I think it's bigger than St. Joe's in Phoenix. And it had to ship all its ICU patients to another hospital, except for the two patients they're treating, because it is so staff intensive to treat those two patients safely, and because they don't want to cross-contaminate to anybody else. It is extremely, there's a huge cost to being stupid about this.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, so huge cost to being stupid, certainly fair, I think, everything you said about the government. Ebola's been around for a while, though. I mean, how is it that, it seems like this is sort of a new, a different strain. Is that what you're going to say?
Well, it's a different strain, but that's not the problem. The problem is transportation. See, it used to be that this would break out in these little isolated villages in sub-Saharan Africa. And the villagers didn't go anywhere. They just all died in place, essentially. Right. Maybe a few would live, but they didn't go anywhere until the disease burned out. Maybe somebody would find a few people or whatever. We've looked for years, for decades, we've looked for the intermediary host somewhere in the jungle, and I'm not sure they know. I don't think they know yet. I mean, they've looked at bat guano and all sorts of stuff.
Looked at what? Sorry, I didn't hear that.
Bat guano,
okay.
Droppings from bats in caves. I mean, they tried to isolate it from something in some animal vector where it stays alive in between human outbreaks. And I don't think we know where that is yet. But the point is, what has happened is we've paved the highways now into the deeper jungle areas. And so now when somebody gets sick, there's more of a chance they transmit out. What happened in this case was a doctor actually went to one of these jungle villages, got contaminated, got infected, and he drove 82 miles out of that village to his local village where he got sick and died, transmitted it to other people who went to the coast. And once it got in Monrovia, and once it got into the coastal cities in Liberia, Katie by the door, that's when it got out of control. And before anybody really knew what was going on. And then once they figured out what was going on, it's a pretty dramatic disease. Most of us have never seen a case. But those that have seen it say it's a pretty dramatic disease. Just you bleed out from your orifices, and it's very dramatic. So that once they figured out what was going on, the problem is then you have to calm the fear, and you have to contain it. And that's, if they'd done it right initially, it wouldn't have been this damaging. But they didn't contain it.
Right. Yeah, that's terrible. That really is. Anything more you want to mention about Ebola? Just you want to talk about the military? I mean, what would happen next? Say it did get really bad. The other thing we've got to be afraid of is like an excuse to use martial law. Some say this is an excuse to get our troops into these African countries for other reasons. What do you think about our military being over there, and then bringing it back?
Yeah, I think that's really a mistake. I don't think this is the role of our military. And for once, where's the UN? I mean, the UN is, for the World Health Organization is part of the UN. If there were once in a lifetime, the answer is the UN. This is it. I mean, I just wonder why they don't use those.
Oh, the UN is a joke.
I know it is.
I mean,
that with some sarcasm, but I'm just saying they always want to invoke the UN for all sorts of other things, but now they want us, but I can't think, personally, I'm a little bit, I keep saying this I've said this several times, is that if the Obama administration were simply incompetent, then once in a while they would act on random chance alone in the security interest of America, but they never seem to. We've got our troops over in Afghanistan getting chewed up for no good strategic purpose. Now we're sending we've let our borders become porous to the point that we're getting other diseases, by the way, like Chagas disease and multiple drug-resistant TB, which is a horrible disease that we've eradicated from America before pretty much, and now is coming back. Thank you to this administration for leaving the borders open to these Central and South American disease victims. And now we're going to send away our National Guard. I mean, to me, that's the perfect trifecta of just degrading your security. I'm sorry. I just don't get that. So, and the other thing, I just worry about our troops because, yeah, you can tell me they're not going to be in. Finally, they've come out and said what they're going to be doing over there. They sent them without telling us really what they were going to be doing. Okay, they're going to be building shelters and stations for taking care of the disease. Okay, fine and good. But they are in an endemic country. They're not going to be, maybe they are, but our experience in the past with military in disease-prone areas is they get the disease to some degree. I mean, whether we're talking HIV or malaria, we've not been able to contain it and keep it out of our troops. In the past, I was in the Navy, but in the past, like when we did extractions, and it was generally the Navy Marine Corps team that would do that, and the SEALs, it would be an amphib ship off the coast of Liberia that would be the backup. So it looks like what they're planning on doing now is, if somebody gets sick, I noticed that the military now is building, you know, these modules that they shipped the doctor back from Africa. It's an isolation module, but it's a one-person shipment. Okay, it cost like $100,000 or something to get him back, and it was for one person. Well, if you really had a lot of people that you needed to ship back, that wouldn't be the way to do it. So I guess the company that's building that, that built those modules, now is building these troop-sized modules that can fit into a troop transport, I guess, with 11 or 12 at a time. You know, we need, I guess we're going to, if we're going to do this, I mean, they have to be, you have to have support for the troops. And in general, in America, if this really did become a big problem, I think we could afford to have a, we need to have a center that does nothing but treat Ebola patients if it gets like that. Because, again, you can't shut down every major hospital in America to treat two patients. And that's what we've seen at Bellevue. You know, there are only four hospitals in America that actually have isolation units that can treat these things, you know, like they would do at a high-level facility. So I think that's what we would have to
do. Yeah, makes sense, makes sense. The only problem is we would have to move the Ebola patients. And, yeah, it's, this is a,
right,
this is just a huge problem, no question.
Yeah, that we can do. With these isolation units, that we can do. I'm not worried about that. And we actually have, I'm near Omaha, and they actually flew a patient into UNMC because they're one of the four hospitals, University of Nebraska Medical Center. So that, you know, when, see, the thing of it is, and this is the other piece of disinformation, I think, that the government put out, oh, everything's fine, we have protocols, as if a protocol, as if giving a hospital that's never dealt with these people, this disease, a piece of paper that tells you the steps to take is really going to answer the situation. No, you need equipment, training, and leadership, all of which we're lacking. But of course, it's like, in all fairness, it's like the first shots in a war never, you know, never go well because you're not expecting it. But, you know, when they're talking about, oh, we have precautions, they were talking about hospital gowns, paper gowns, you know, latex gloves and non-occlusive masks. That's what we use to help prevent staph and Pseudomonas in a hospital. That is not adequate for Ebola. It never was. And that's what they sent the nurses in with. And I think, you know, it's hard. The problem there is it's hard to take them off without contaminating yourself. In the real level four containment facilities like Fort Detrick, what they had is they have biocontainment suits that are washed down and decontaminated before you take off the suit. Well, now I guess they're getting more of those out there, but you know, that's the right. I mean, I hear the CDC starting to squeak and say the right things. Like, we're going to send it. We're not expecting you guys to know how to do it. We'll send a team to you if you have a case. Good idea, guys. That's what you should have done first place.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Too little, too late. It's a common problem. Talk a little bit about your candidacy, if you would, for just a moment. Since you are a doctor, of course, Ron Paul is a doctor. He's a politician I followed for many years. What are your thoughts about your own candidacy? You know, just what you're working on, and then, you know, any mentions on Obamacare, because it's you know, we're talking politics and doctors, so that's a good mix.
Well, you know, Ron Paul is actually a fellow member of the Association of American Physicians of Surgeons. I'm one of the past presidents of that organization, and we're kind of the libertarian arm of organized medicine. We're the people that actually believe that medicine is between a doctor and a patient, not between a doctor and a government bureaucrat and a patient. And we're the free market arm of organized medicine. So, you know, being a libertarian is kind of a process of becoming, kind of like Buddhist enlightenment. I always tell people, you know, I was a lifelong Republican. I mean, I was a very conservative person, and people say, why did you leave the Republican Party? And I said, well, I didn't really leave them. They left me. I'm still standing on the Constitution.
To coin the Ronald Reagan phrase, I love that, when he left the Democrats. Yeah,
I didn't know I'd stolen that from him. You know, I live in a state where we have a Republican governor who has been our governor for the most part of the last 25 years. Yet we have the highest corporate tax rate in the nation, which possibly makes us the highest corporate tax rate in the world. Isn't that sad? We have one of the top personal tax rates. We just got in the last budget cycle the biggest budget increase in the history of the state. You know, we have 20% more government workers per capita in the state of Iowa than they do in California. This is bad. We are regulated from the time we get up in the morning till the time we go to bed at night. And it's by unelected immortal boards. It's not your elected officials. It's like Professor Hamburger at Columbia Law School says about it. It's the abrogation of constitutional authority. It's just taking authority into the governor's hands and setting up these administrative offices that do what exactly what the Constitution prohibited, and that is there's only supposed to be three ways you make law, and it should start in the legislative body. You shouldn't be able to just set up, and Obamacare is a perfect example of this, as is Medicare. It's not what the legislators wrote. Like, you know, I was on John Stossel years ago when Obamacare was first published, and he brought out this big clump of papers and put it on the desk, like, you know, this is good sleep medicine for your kids. Read them this bill. And he said, 2,800 pages. And I said to him, I said, you know, that's not really important. That could be an untranslated Greek ode, Obamacare. What you really need to know is it's the one line that says, we authorize Health and Human Services to write administrative code that carries the force of law. And that's what we have at all levels of government, but especially our state has really gone for this. And we don't, you know, here we are in Iowa, raw milk is illegal. I tell people, if raw milk is illegal, you know, what, how do you think you're going to be allowed to choose your health care? Or how are you going to be able to carry a weapon? I mean, let's take back our state for liberty. That's why I'm in this race. And honestly, I think we've done a lot. You know, the first thing we've done is we've raised the consciousness of Iowans. And I know that's happening because a lady was heard at the grocery store the other day saying, you know, I didn't know it, but I think I might be a libertarian. You know, when I started in this race, people thought libertarians wore tinfoil hats and were all about marijuana legalization, you know. So we've moved the ball. We've moved the football forward, and we've shown them, no, we're about liberty, constitutional liberty, and that no matter what your issue is, free people do it better. And we just have to get back our individual liberty. The other thing I think we've exposed, you know, you were talking about the media. You know, we've been having a lot of fun with Iowa Public TV, but this year they completely excluded all third parties and independents from the debate. Now, Iowa's one of the nine states. Again, when you have what I've learned in this, I guess it's my process of becoming. What I've learned in this is we have two big parties. And they may look like they're different. They may act in public like they're different on social media.
Oh, they're the same thing. They're the same thing practically, you know.
Just practically. Get this one. You can't make this stuff up. In the state of Iowa right now, Jack Hatch, the Democrat challenger, is the business partner of the Republican governor's biggest contributor. So not only
God. Yeah, you can't make this stuff up. That's insane.
So basically, because we've been at first we wondered, why is there no evidence of campaign workers for Jack Hatch? Well, it turns out he's never been running against the governor. He's been running with him. It's been a fix. It's like WWF, you know, World Wrestling. You know,
yeah. That's scripted. Exactly the analogy I always use. You know, it's like a wrestling match. It's all just fake.
Right. Now,
it's a fake opposition, you know.
And I didn't realize how fake it was and how criminal this whole enterprise was until I got really into the race and I've been watching it. And because he owns the opposition, except for me, and because he owns the media, I mean, they control the electoral process, the political machine. And I don't care if you're Sister Teresa. If you've been in power for 20 years and you've taken over the electoral process, that's an evil thing. That is inimical to individual liberty and to us maintaining liberty for our children. We need to stop this. So if for no other reason, you need to vote differently. That's it. I mean, you can't keep going down that road. So anyway, Iowa Public TV refused to have us in the debates, and they have all these apparently objective criteria to exclude us. And one of them is you have to be a member of a real party. Well, guess what? You know, the Iowa legislature conveniently, the two big parties voted not to let the Libertarians be a real party, even though they were the third biggest party in America.
How convenient. A real...
Yeah, convenient.
I mean, can you believe how disgusting that is? A real party?
Yeah.
Who is it for them to decide what a real party is? How about if the people decide
right.
that? You know, this is unbelievable.
Well,
the two-party system is a complete
scam.
It's just window dressing. Unbelievable.
Well, and it's funny to me, and I say this as a recovering Republican, it's funny to me that I always thought we were the party of principle. And we complained about the Democrats using the Saul Alinsky principle of it's never the issue, it's always about consolidation of power. But now that I'm outside, I see the Republicans doing exactly the same thing. And I'm not denigrating the grassroots guy. I'm talking about at the level of governor up, the people that are running for national office, the big national parties and the big state parties, it's about staying in power. It's not about doing the best for the state or the nation that I can see. We're seeing commercials that say, I gave you the biggest tax cut in the history of the state. No, Governor, you gave a few of your crony capitalist buddies the biggest tax cut. They didn't give tax cuts to everybody. They gave tax cuts to a few of their friends and at the expense of all of us. And I suspect that in your state and in every state, that's going on to one degree or the other. So in general, I would say it's before I tell people this election cycle particularly, it's more important to be attached to your liberty, less attached to your political party. And let's take down the two-party system. Let's you know, 60% of people want a third party on the ballot. People pride themselves in saying we vote for the candidate, not for the party. Let's really start doing that. And that's been the message we've been trying to get out, and I think it's been good. And along the way, we're making fun of Iowa Public TV because we have a little Big Bird video where Big Bird is invited to join the Good Birds Club, and he thinks he should be able to go because he's a good bird. He eats his vegetables and does things for his mommy, but when he gets there, his feet are too big. Objective criteria. So it's been kind of fun.
Very good point. Well, Lee, give out your website and tell people where they can learn more about your campaign.
Yeah, I'm at www.heeb, H-I-E-B. It's I before E. So it's heeb2014.org or .com, heeb2014.com. And, you know, join us on Facebook and Twitter where really most of the action is. But all the issue papers and all the stuff is on the website. And we appreciate anybody's support that wants to help. You know, if we're going to save America, we got to save one state at a time. And we're trying to make that be Iowa right now.
Excellent. Fantastic. Well, Lee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. This has been fun.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.